going to be difficult for me to concentrate when the Bills made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a good problem to have, isn't
it? Now, they could be going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If they win.
Yeah. Just one more game, right? Next week. And then, yeah.
Against the Chiefs.
Oh, that game's over now?
Yeah. Okay. Chiefs won.
That's not what you wanted.
Nope. Nope. Buffalo does not get another playoff game, but we are not a sports podcast, but this is uncharted waters.
Mm-hmm.
For Bills fans. And I was talking to you about this in the car. If the Bills were to win the Super Bowl, are they still the Bills? You know?
Yeah. I mean, the fans are what the fans are. I don't think that will ever change, even if the team is winning. I know that the whole personality of the fan base has been built on them losing.
Nah, whatever.
But
we're boring people.
Yeah.
Welcome to While She's Napping. I am Adam.
And I'm Cindy.
So, hey, we're going to talk today about the anti-vax movement. And before we do, you know, our discussion on this, I want to put out there to anyone listening that may hold these beliefs, I should say, or ideologies, we mean no disrespect. The reason why I'm doing this now is because when we did the episode on the fat acceptance community, there was quite a bit of pushback, and we meant nothing personal by it. And I assure you, when it comes to this movement, we mean nothing personal. But when it comes to our analysis of it, we may disagree on some things. I don't know personally, well, maybe one, maybe two anti-vaxxers, but not extreme anti-vaxxers, just those that refuse to take a vaccine. I think there's a difference, and we'll get to the subtleties in a bit. But right off the bat, we mean no disrespect. Probably.
The other important disclaimer right off the bat is that neither of us have any training or education in medicine. We're not public health professionals or experts by any means. Neither of us work in this field. We're basically just wanting to, you know, talk about this subject from the perspective of, you know, just your average person.
Right.
And parents too. I know, you know, who have had to do the research, talk to the pediatrician, kind of wade through all of the misinformation and confusion that's out there regarding vaccines. So that's kind of the perspective we're coming from. But there's plenty of other resources for technical analyses and, you know, actual medical information. Don't take that from us.
So, you know, if something we say displeases you or you get upset, I mean, you can come out to us, you know, with your anger on the social media platforms if you want. Probably won't respond, but we invite you to just turn it off. Okay, that's it. Just turn it off.
And if something we say is incorrect and you are someone who works in, you know, the pharmaceutical industry or the medical professions, please also feel free to let us know if there's something that we're incorrect or misinterpreting or something we just don't know. We're interested in learning more.
Yeah, that's helpful. But if you know, we say something and you disagree with it and you say it's not true and your source is a Facebook post,
right?
Well, we're not going to take you seriously.
Right.
Not to say that all the anti-vax people are painted with the same brush of Facebook information, but I will go out
part of it
on a limb and say the majority of them are.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that.
Okay. Before we go on, I mentioned the fat acceptance episode. We have a whole catalog of episodes discussing various social topics. Most, if not all of them, are timeless. So if you're listening to us for the first time, we welcome you to the show. We hope you enjoy the episode and we hope you get something out of it. Honestly, we mean nothing personal by it. We just thought, hey, the vaccine for COVID-19 is rolling out. Maybe this is something we should discuss because there is a significant deal of pushback coming when it comes to those refusing to take the vaccine. In fact, I've heard one in every three, or one third, I should say, of people in the UK projected to refuse the vaccine. don't know how accurate that is right now. This was a report from October, so mm-hmm. it's quote-unquote dated. You know, yeah. things change rapidly. But I thought this is something that we should explore given the fact that the vaccine is beginning to roll out. That being said, if you listen to this episode and you like it and you want to hear some other content that we have, we invite you to check out the archives of the show, download an episode that tickles your fancy, and while you're there, just subscribe to the show. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcatchers that you can think of. We're also on the YouTube. We stream the episode on the YouTubes. Check us out there. Subscribe to us. Tell your friends about While She's Napping. We appreciate it. Word of mouth is key. It's crucial to success when it comes to podcasting, and we appreciate the help. Moreover, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please give us 5 stars and a quick review. It doesn't help boost the algorithms at all. Just makes us look cool. Makes us look like we know, you know, I guess what we're talking about. Pretty much we don't. But if you enjoy us and you want to go on this journey with us, we're approximately a year deep into doing this project. We appreciate it and we thank you for the support. Also, if you want to get in touch with us, we are on all the social media platforms, including Facebook moms out there. if you'd like to contact us there, you can.
We're on Facebook at facebook.com/whileshesnapping, on Instagram at whileshesnapping, and on Twitter at shesnappingpod. And you can also email us at whileshesnapping@gmail.com.
Okay. That being said, that out of the way, how I want to structure this is we can talk loosely or generally about the history of the anti-vax movement. I would, you know, I'm sure there is something, there are some things that have popped up in history before the most recent that I can pinpoint, the mm-hmm. 1998 research paper. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are some things in history that have happened prior to that. I'm mm-hmm. almost yeah. positive. So I want to talk about the history of it. We can do that generally. I then want to shift focus to how Facebook or social media platforms have sort of capitalized on this for the rise of the anti-vax movement, why a specific demographic of people seems to be attached to it, and also the political leanings of it, because that is something that has struck me as odd. And lastly, what people, not specifically you and I, but people can do to sort of dissuade misinformation, how we can course correct the notion of misinformation feeding through the social media loops. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, if you are a proponent of anti-vax, you probably are aware of the fact that we're regarding this, much of this, as misinformation right off the bat.
Yes.
No disrespect intended. This is just our position about it. So I don't know if you want to expouse more on that.
No, that sounds like a good outline. I think we can just dig into the history.
Do you have any points of the history that you would like to acknowledge?
Well, just for,
not yeah. to interrupt. The only thing that I am aware of, obviously, the most recent thing is the 1998 paper, Andrew Wakefield, the
autism one.
Yeah, how it's related to how the measles, the mumps, and rubella.
Yeah, MMR. Yeah.
Yeah. That vaccine has a direct link to autism, according to this guy.
And right.
apparently that research paper, that medical paper or whatever, has been completely debunked and actually yes. was regarded as fraudulent.
Yeah. He was like, the word's not disbarred. That's if you're an attorney, but whatever the, I can't think of the word right now, but he
his
was basically
medical,
like,
license was probably,
yeah,
revoked.
He's viewed as like a hack.
Yes. But he was a doctor. He
right.
was a legit MD.
But that paper was very flawed. I think the study itself was completely illegitimate, the way that it was conducted, and the
was
results
this
were
peer reviewed.
I think so. And then it was retracted.
Got it.
I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think that's how it got out into the mainstream in the first place.
That's what good old Wikipedia is for.
Yeah.
Anyways,
but even before that, so I feel like that is like the modern resurgence of the anti-vax movement, but just what little I know about the history, there's kind of the seminal legal case, like the original court case that addressed this was in 1905.
In America.
Right. Yeah, I don't know about other countries, but in the U.S., it was a case in Massachusetts. It was Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And it was in regards to the smallpox vaccine being mandated for citizens in the state of Massachusetts And if they didn't, they would receive a fine. And so it was mostly about autonomy. And I think that the heart of the issue was the state can't tell me what to do. The government can't tell me what to do with my body. You can't tell me I have to inject this thing into my body if I don't want to. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And ultimately, the court found in favor of the state, saying that, yes, they can, because it's a matter of public health. And your liberty and autonomy doesn't outweigh the health of your fellow citizens and the general public. So it kind of highlighted the limits of what people think of in terms of our liberty and freedom in the U.S. And we kind of touched on this when we talked about climate change and the environment. We've talked about it a lot in relation to COVID, that your freedom to do something can only goes as far as when it starts harming other people.
Right.
So that was kind of, that's been, I think, the reference point for most of the other cases that have come down the line since then. And there's been many, I guess, you know, at all levels, at state and federal court levels, but nothing, I don't think there's been any major shift from that original finding. I feel like that has, that sort of set the precedent. And there's variation between states and in terms of, you know, regulations for how easy it is to get an exemption based on different reasons. But I feel like this it seems to me like this is the case that's always referred back to and kind of holds the standard.
It makes me wonder if that's something that can be used as ammunition for government officials now. You know how in court they, like Roe v. Wade, they will cite that constantly,
right?
You know, and they'll always revisit that specific case file. I wonder if this is something that has been revisited, or maybe right now lawyers are gearing up and using this as sort of ammunition to say, no, actually the state does have the right to, I don't want to say force, but maybe it is force, force you to, well, I shouldn't say force, because force is saying no matter what, you have to take this.
Right, it's just as a consequence.
There's a consequences if you don't.
Whether
if,
it's a fine, yes, or you can't send your kids to a public school or whatever, yeah.
So I wonder if with the COVID vaccine, once it's readily available and people aren't taking it, like at work and stuff, if people's employer are going to say, no, in order to work here, you have to be vaccinated for this.
Yeah, and I think since this original case, I feel like most of the attention has been towards childhood vaccinations in schools in terms of people seeking exemptions. I'm sure adults seek it too for whatever reason, but I think most of the regulation is around kids attending public schools.
Yes. And because, private, because if you go to a private school, you have to be vaccinated for this, for certain things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. And daycares, I mean, it's the same. So yeah, I feel like this case probably is referred back to. I don't think it has the same name recognition as Roe v. Wade, but I think all of the other cases that have come since then, mainly, you know, like you mentioned, the resurgence in the late 90s, early 2000s after the autism link was projected, that I'm sure that a lot of the cases following this one referred back to it as, and that's what I mean by it set the precedent and the standard. And no court has really found a way to push back against it in any sort of legitimate way.
Well, you know, hopping back up to this, the most recent case of the autism link and whatnot, it strikes me as weird because, you know, we talked about other you know, groups that push misinformation or receive misinformation, like the QAnons. We had a whole episode about QAnons. And it has to be a boogeyman effect. In other words, there has to be, in their case, a Satan-worshipping cabal of elitist pedophiles, right? And that is legit the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Right? It's really hard to get worse than that. If you're going to go all in, go fucking all in, and that's QAnon. But for this, it's like autism is the buzzword, and I find that to be a disrespect to people with autism.
Yeah.
Right? It's you give this to your kid, you give this vaccine to your kid, they're going to be worse off.
Yeah.
And there is an argument, to them, worse off. There is an argument that autism, it certainly has its challenges,
sure.
Right? It's socially, it does have its challenges. But that's not even, to me, it's like, I don't know. I don't know.
Your child
that I
can
would,
still live a yeah. high quality life with autism. Like, it's not, I know, I've heard that sentiment too.
A lot
too,
of geniuses right? had autism.
Especially from parents who do have autistic children say, you know, it's highly offensive to me that you think that risking your child, like from your perspective, talking to someone who's anti-vax and believes the autism theory, you think that risking your child getting autism from this vaccine is worse than risking your child dying of this infectious disease right. that the vaccine can protect them against.
According to them.
Right. But like, it's just like you said, making autism the boogeyman, like that is the worst possible outcome. Like you'd rather risk, even if it was true that there was a possibility that the vaccine could cause autism, even if we subscribe to that for a moment, just for argument's sake, is that really worse than the potential outcome of your child getting like the measles or some yeah. like, you know, getting polio or, well, I mean, that's not even really a thing anymore, I don't think, but like any of these other diseases that could be fatal?
Well, I mean, no disrespect to those that may be autistic or have the spectrum of fallen in the spectrum of autism. I
right.
again, I'm not familiar with the broad range of this, but I think there is an argument to be made that everybody that is a parent or is having a child, you want your child to be 100% healthy. You want, mm-hmm. and that's not to say that people with autism are unhealthy. It's just obviously a parent would prefer, I think, and I don't know that this is controversial. I don't think it is. For a parent to say, I just want my child to be 100% normal, like before they're born, right? And if they're born...
I don't think normal is the right word.
Okay,
but I know what you're saying.
Without any sort of
yeah
deficiencies
sure.
socially,
or complications
physically.
Yes. Or... Yeah.
You prefer that. And I don't think that's abnormal. If, as a result, your child is born with some sort of deficiency or mental whatever, or even physical deficiency or whatever, the good parents say, okay, this is, we're rolling with it. We roll with the punches. We'll make the best of the situation.
Well,
I love my child no matter what. And
yeah.
it's not less than human. It's still my child. Right. So if your child were to get autism, I don't understand, even if this is true, which is not, first of all, the fact that you would be able to tell that there's a significant difference in your child's behavior or we'll just stick with that behavior before vaccination and after, because when is a baby vaccinated for the first time?
It
for
depends
measles
on the vaccine.
And mumps.
There, it's all the schedule is different, so they get they. I think
like
they
6 months
the,
in. There,
no,
the first
there's
vaccine.
Some that start at 2 months. There's
okay.
some. There's one they get as soon as they're born.
To see a significant difference in personality from months 1 and 2.
No,
and
you
then,
can't. That's what I'm saying. So some of
no,
them.
No, you don't. You don't see a significant difference.
Right, because
yeah.
they can't communicate. Autism mostly presents in terms of communication.
You're
and a baby's
my
not.
Point.
No. I'm saying the timeline of vaccination for children is usually the most vaccines that they get is like between ages like 1 and 3. Well, even before age 1, I think. But still, my point is that they're being vaccinated on the same timeline as when autism usually starts to present itself.
Oh, okay. So it's...
So, right. So it would might seem correlated. Like
the
if
only
you're
reason
watching,
why I bring this up is because there are moms out there, video clips that I've seen that have said my infant, my baby mm-hmm. was goo-goo-goo-ha-ga, all lively. And as soon as they get the vaccine, they just stopped talking. They stopped doing the goo-goo-ga-gas. They were just blank. And I'm just like, no, it doesn't happen that way.
Right.
And if it does, they're probably fucking miserable because they're feeling the natural
reactions. Well,
yeah,
if it's for like 24 hours,
yes.
it's normal. They get a fever and
yes.
have an immune response and then they're fine. But if you notice, if there's, again, non-medical professionals here. This is just my understanding from being a parent, talking with our pediatrician and doing some basic research, but that you would notice it gradually over time, but it's still a relatively short period of time, like that age 1 to 3,
right,
when your child is developing their communication skills,
right,
and you're starting to see their behaviors and learn what normal behavior is for them, is happening at the same time that they're being vaccinated. So it's really hard to separate. Like, I can understand as a parent, if you see your child changing in some way that's, you know, they're communicating less or they're having some trouble with something, you want to find an answer for why that's happening.
You want to pinpoint something.
Of course, right. So I feel like it's a very natural reaction to say,
yeah,
oh, it must be this. It must be this vaccine. That's the only thing we've done different. And now look at their behavior changing. So I get it and I sympathize with that. But there's so much evidence to the contrary to that eliminates that as a possibility at this point, that it's just, it seems irresponsible to still ascribe to that, because it's, if you're listening to reliable sources, there's full agreement across the board that vaccines do not cause autism.
We need to discuss, and this is a good segue, what we rely to be reliable, what we understand to be reliable sources. And what is tricky about this case in particular, this Andrew Wakefield paper or research project linking autism to the vaccines, is that this is a medical doctor, or was a medical doctor. And this specific paper, although debunked, although regarded as fraudulent, is still pervasive in these anti-vax groups, mm-hmm, today, to the point that they still cite this paper.
Yep.
And I don't know that the volume of it being fraudulent has cranked up enough.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not to say that they might be unaware, they being the anti-vaxxers who cite this paper, are unaware of the pushback, of the criticisms of the paper, but I don't know that it in a wide scale of people that say that this is bullshit,
mm-hmm,
do it loud enough.
Yeah. So here's the, this comes back to some of the censorship arguments and things we've talked about as a result of, you know, the recent social media platforms taking Trump off, you know, deleting his accounts and everything. But is that paper itself still available if you go,
yeah,
and look for it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so why isn't it just taken down? Because it's true, people don't really always notice. Like, sometimes I don't know
that it's available on any official websites, but you can find it.
Right. So people have downloaded it and then, yes, they share it and they, okay. Yeah. So I don't really know how you get rid of that now that the cat's kind of out of the bag, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Or people just screenshot it, or, yeah, that's true.
You know, find, they cherry pick what they want to find.
Right. And the retraction notice for scientific papers, or if there's an edit or something, I feel like you're right, it's not always made super obvious. And once someone reads that paper, they might not ever see the retraction or see the edit.
They might not do any more or further research into this, right?
Right.
They'll look for confirmation bias.
Yeah.
But my point is that we need to, and maybe this is going to go later on when we talk about how do we course correct this, we need to have a general understanding of what is reliable information and what isn't, and what are reliable sources and what are not. Because I think the difference between this and something like QAnon is that Q is, quote unquote, this person with, you know, high credentials in the government or whatever. He's a high-ranking official. And it's so mysterious, which makes it attractive, whereas this was written by a doctor,
mm-hmm,
right? So there's a little bit more clout, not a lot, even though, because it's been redacted, but there's still a little bit more clout to grapple onto this, mm-hmm, and say, oh, this must be legit. It's been written by a doctor.
Right.
Whereas if you try to entertain Q, you know, logical person will be like, wait a minute, who the fuck is Q? What does this have to do? You know, it gets confusing. Whereas this, it's written by a doctor, it was published, must be true.
Right. So you feel like you've kind of checked the box in terms of doing your due diligence,
right,
that this is a reliable source. It's,
yeah,
someone who's qualified.
Yeah.
And this was published and accepted. So, right, I think you have to go a step further, that just because one source is reliable or one person appears qualified, that doesn't make it legit or reliable. Like you should look for agreement amongst.
But something that's peer reviewed is that. And this was published, from my understanding, in a peered reviewed.
We should
journal.
Double check that because I'm not even 100% sure that that's true.
The Lancet published it. The Lancet.
That, I mean, it's a medical journal,
whatever.
I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with it
because
I don't work in medicine.
On February 2nd, 2010, they fully retract this paper from the published record.
Okay. So, yeah. So it was peer reviewed and published, and then it was found
redacted,
to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Inaccurate. I mean, that happens. Sometimes it happens. Things get, science isn't perfect. And.
But it took until 2010. This was published in 1998.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it took so long.
You know what I'm saying? So my point is, you know, there is this sense of people not furthering the research and saying, oh, wait, this was redacted. They might not even see that. A.
Right, I know.
And B, we're talking about people that are largely, if not entirely, grappling with the idea of conspiracy theories anyway. So mm-hmm. if they think that this is a government ploy to right. sort of give your child some sort of deficiency on purpose or whatever to amp up the tax revenue or something, they're going to think, no, this is part of the conspiracy. They're trying to hide this information from
us. Yeah, but I think that's a very small percentage of the people that we're talking about. I think there's a difference between vaccine hesitant people and anti-vax
okay.
people. So I feel like people who are vaccine hesitant might have just seen something in passing, or they know about this paper, and or they've heard through the grapevine about this link to autism, and they're sure. hesitant because they're skeptical because they want to do what's best for their kid. And I feel like there's a healthy level of skepticism there, which will lead to you being informed and making the best decision for your child and your family. But right, people who fall into the anti-vax category are in it, like conspiracy style in it, and fiercely against it, and promote the disinformation. And I think that is the population that's next to impossible to reach, no matter how reasonable or logical or evidence-based your argument is.
Why autism, though? What is the main thing that makes this the enemy? We talked about how this is insulting to those that have autism or parents of children with autism. It is insulting. But what about autism? You know, we're trying to, one of two things have to be true when it comes to Andrew Wakefield, who wrote, you know, or researched this and published it or submitted it for publication. One of two things. One, he knew it was bullshit all along, and he came to the conclusion that, well, got to pick something. I'm going to go with autism. Let's see if it flies. And published a bullshit paper and got away with it and knowingly lied. Or his research was just so hasty that he, you know, inadvertently ended up to this faulty link between this vaccine or these vaccines and autism, and he was genuine in his research, or he thought he was, and he said, and maybe with some pushback, but there wasn't any sort of malice involved in his research. One of those two things has to be true.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it, about the history or the details, but I think I just looked up an article in the on NCBI. And they're talking about the major flaws in his study were small sample size, speculative conclusions, uncontrolled study design. So it was flaws in the design of the study.
So he might have genuinely thought he found a link.
That's possible. Yeah. I mean, I think it's irresponsible to try to publish.
That's just medical. Bad science.
Exactly. It was just bad science. I don't think it doesn't seem like it was necessarily malicious. I mean, I don't know what he had to gain from it, but I think. It seems like it was autism solely because that was an emerging medical diagnosis. Like, I don't think autism was very, I think there's been more diagnoses of autism in recent years, like in the last couple of decades, around the same time that this study was being done. And that was also when the MMR vaccine started being like,
So it's just a perfect storm.
Right. I think it was just the timing of the recommendations for the MMR vaccine and autism diagnoses starting to increase. And so it seemed like there might be a connection. And he conducted this crappy study with a sample size of 12.
Right.
And came to this conclusion. And then
it's just bad science.
It spread.
It's just bad science. That's all it is. So I would like to think more that he was just a shitty scientist instead of picking a new or discovered or raising awareness of some medical condition like autism and said, nope, that's my boogeyman. I'm going with that. Right. I think that would be worse than poor science. It's worse. Poor science is worse in the scientific community, but that obviously vastly affects people when it comes to, you know, findings and research. But I think it's shittier for a person to say, no, fuck, I'm choosing this disease and I'm working backwards.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's intentionally like trying to
demonize. I shouldn't say autism is a disease. It's not.
I know what you mean. But I'm saying, but even within science, if you have that's just using bias to prove your foregone conclusion.
Right.
Like if you've already come to the conclusion you want to, and then you design a study to make that result happen.
Right.
That's not science.
All right. Let's take a pause here. We're about 30 minutes in. When we come back after the break, I do want to talk about the group at large that sort of buy into this and, you know, how we can sort of dissuade misinformation and whatnot regarding vaccines when it comes to COVID.
Okay.
All right, hang tight. As a mom, I wouldn't call you a Facebook mom.
But I was for a while, I think, when I was pregnant.
So we'll put a pin in that because I want to get back to that. But for me, from my understanding, my observations, and this has nothing to do with, you know, pinning genders or sexes against each other. I'm not trying to do that. Largely, it seems, at least ostensibly, that the anti-vax movement is largely made up of females and mothers more specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that has nothing to do with them being more gullible. That has nothing to do with them not doing any further research. I think there's a reason, because, you know, they're worried about their children. They want what's best for their children. And that's not to say dads don't. But from my loose general research here, it seems that moms dive into internet research or website or blog-based research when it comes to tips and tricks for raising your children, maybe life hacks and stuff like that, more than fathers do. Do you disagree with that analysis? Or
no, I mean, there definitely seems to be a pattern. I think you're right that it's not anything to do with, you know, women are more likely to fall for this or anything like that. I think it's just because there are men who fall for plenty of conspiracy theories or misinformation in regards to other topics. But in this one in particular, I think that's just a function of moms maybe being, and we're talking about traditional, you know, the relationship like ours, you know, a mom and a dad, heterosexual relationship, like that. The mom tends to be the nurturer, the one who's, you know, at least in our case, like I'm the one who mostly makes the doctor's appointments, and I'm usually the one to bring her to the pediatrician and kind of like really dive into that kind of stuff. And I also think moms are more likely to reach out for social support
In Facebook groups and
in
stuff
things
like
that. Facebook yeah. groups, mom blogs, following Instagram accounts that are about, you know, hashtag mom life, stuff yeah. like that. Like, I feel like it's just, it's become sort of its own thing, yeah. like its own niche of being.
Well, the Facebook mom is
yes,
a term.
Right.
There
it's
is
a,
no
it's
Facebook
thing.
Dad.
Right. So I just think that's a function of maybe that women are more likely to reach out for support in that space for whatever reason. I mean, it could just be, I mean, there, I don't think it's any secret that, you know, just being a parent, period, is hard. But being a mom, especially through pregnancy and sure. that first, you know, that postpartum phase has its own unique challenges. And so I think that's what brings moms together.
Or makes mothers in that particular situation more eager to join these
to
groups
reach
and
out.
Reach out.
Yeah, and yeah. make connections with other moms. And I think that that's where this festers. And I know for me, I definitely had that experience because I joined, you know, I was a first time mom. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I had a ton of questions. And we did a whole episode on our pregnancy and birth mm-hmm. story and all that with our daughter. But I had gone into it wanting to have an unmedicated birth. And that brought me so far down the rabbit hole yeah. of ultra crunchy, natural, everything. So many anti-vax posts in the groups that I followed simply because I was interested in hearing other people's birth stories about how they navigated going about having an unmedicated birth.
And having an unmedicated birth doesn't necessarily have anything to do with not vaccinating your
right.
kids.
Right. And so it got very frustrating to me because I'm like, I'm not here for this shit. Like, I don't want to hear about your essential oils. I don't want to right. hear about, like, I don't want you to give me this fear tactic about, like, it's just, yes, I was there for unmedicated birth stories and sort of for, like, encouragement, you know, and
Tips and tricks.
Yeah, tips and tricks for yeah. having an unmedicated birth. And also learning about cloth diapering was sure. the other place where I got totally spammed with anti-vax stuff. And I mean, I went into this very pro-vax, pro-science. Like, that was never a question, whether
See,
or not we were going to vaccinate.
I got to stop you there. I don't know that we're pro-vax. Like, we're not, yeah, fucking vaccines. We're just like, this is what you do.
Right. I don't have any reason to question it. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like pro-vax, you're, yeah, fuck yeah, vaccinations.
I'm going to say that the day I get my COVID vaccine.
No, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Fuck yeah.
But I'm saying we're not, we just regard it as, no, that's just what you do.
Well, that's what I just regard it as, it's just, it's medicine. It's like
yeah,
any
yeah,
other,
yeah.
like,
we
healthcare.
Are pro-science, I
yeah,
will say
like,
that.
I'm just, I mean, I trust doctors. I trust science. I mean, I believe in being informed and
yeah, yeah,
understanding
yeah.
what's going on with your health and the health of your family. But ultimately, vaccination, there's just so much evidence behind it as to, like, I just can't imagine why I wouldn't. But, right, so I went into this with that lens, so I didn't get sucked in. But it was really annoying
right.
to be in those groups and be constantly spammed with anti-vax stuff. But I can see how if you go into something like that, like if you're someone like me who went there because you're interested in cloth diapering or something, and you didn't have a strong stance on vaccines and didn't really have an opinion one way or the other, I can easily see how someone would get sucked in, especially if that's the only information that you're receiving.
So peek behind the curtain, and not trying to call you out, I'm just, you know, reinforcing what you just said, and I don't know if this had anything to do with the crunchy people you were talking to, but I do remember specifically you and I had an argument about the eye ointment, and you mm-hmm. know, it
yep.
wasn't, you had your reservations. I was saying, no, I just think this is what we should do. And obviously, we had this conversation during the late stages of your pregnancy, I'm sure. And I'm not, you know, insulting. I'm saying hormones were out of whack at that point. No, yes. You have
They're out of
this
whack
before.
The whole pregnancy.
Sure. Okay, fine. You know what I mean? At this point, you're prepping for delivery, and I'm sure that's a very stressful situation, and you don't want to make
well, there's
a wrong
so many
choice.
Decisions to make, and there's so many things to consider.
That's what I'm
yeah.
saying. I don't know how influential this
okay.
these mom people on Facebook.
Okay, but I'm going to stop you there because this is I did not question that because of things I saw on the mom Facebook groups. That was a discussion I had with three of the midwives at our practice.
Okay,
and referring to things like the AAP and those reliable sources of information, that the eye ointment is not a necessary
You're
thing.
Right.
Like
I
it's
know
the
that.
Thing that they're just kind of, they're like, yeah, it seems beneficial. It can prevent these infections. However, there's emerging information to show that it, you know, overusing antibiotics is not a
sure.
great thing either in general, not necessarily for your individual health, but in general. And so that was why I was questioning it. I was like, is this is really necessary? Should we introduce an antibiotic super, you know, when she's first born? And so my point is, I didn't just see that on Facebook and say, oh, no, I'm not doing that.
I'm not accusing you of that. I'm saying, I wonder how that, if that is the starting jump off point, something like yeah. that for other people.
To go down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I know. Well, I think I'm glad that I was made aware of that. And it probably, honestly, it probably did come from one of those groups that I was even made aware that you can even question these things.
Right.
Like, I feel like if I hadn't been in those groups, I don't even know if I would have known what the ointment was
when we showed up
to the hospital.
And
then they ask you all these questions. And I remember, I'm like, I literally just gave birth. And they're like, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. We're taking the baby. We're going to do this Hep B vaccine. We're going to take we're going to do the one. I'm like, I can only imagine if I hadn't thought about those things ahead of time, that it's super overwhelming. But that's where the trust in your doctors comes in. But that's why I had very open conversations with the midwives throughout the entire pregnancy about all these questions. And I relied on evidence-based information.
Yeah. I'm not trying to bring up an argument. I'm just using that as an illustration to sort of pinpoint this is how it could start with a lot of other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, in fairness, to wrap up that story, doctor came in because we made the agreement, hey, let's just talk to the doctor. I wanted to do it. You had your reservations at the time, not because of anything anti-medicine. You just were concerned with, like you just said, the large amount of antibiotics and 10 minutes after the child was born.
Well, and I just hadn't gotten a straight answer either from our healthcare providers.
So not to say that you did anything wrong or anything. It just, we made the agreement. All right, let's talk to the doctor before they apply the ointment. We made that agreement. Doctor came in, literally said what it was for. And my attitude was, good enough for me. I'm good.
I mean, she basically said there's no downside to it. Like, for your baby's health.
Right.
And I was like, okay, just do it.
Yeah, and good enough for me. It's fine.
Like,
and
I stopped caring about super bugs.
Literally 20 minutes later, it sort of faded away, right?
Of course. I wasn't worried about it for her. I didn't think the eye ointment was going to give her an immediate reaction or have any issue.
But I wonder if anti-vax people do.
Maybe.
You know, like, oh, this made my child blind.
Yeah.
No,
for me, it's the same reason. It's the same reason why before COVID, I never really used Purell or anything.
Right,
I don't believe in the overuse of antibiotics. And that is an ongoing conversation in the medical field.
Sure.
That's all.
Pandemic, you know, notwithstanding at that point.
Yeah, Purell, I shower in it.
Yeah.
Sure.
all right. So let's shift gears. So for me, you know, you touched on the crunchiness. You talked about the essential oils and stuff. And for a good portion of my adult life, I would classify... And again, I don't want to generalize, but those that have those types of interests, specifically those women that have those type of interests, and some men, but large essential oils and stuff, it's largely women. I would think of them intuitively as, you know, super liberal vegan-like people that are just hippies. But now it sort of has taken a turn more towards the right and more conservative-based people. And that strikes me as odd because those that fully buy into this are all about the organic, are all about the free range, are all about these natural healing tendencies or what are those? The sound healing.
Yeah.
Or these, you
crystals.
Know,
yeah.
These types of, you know...
You're really generalizing a lot.
Of course, yeah. Of course. But you know what I'm saying? The essential oils and all that, that's very natural, right? It's holistic. And I would, you know, link that to liberals, like super liberal hippie people. But now it's sort of
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I know what you're saying, but I also think liberals in general are also very pro-science.
No, I know. I'm just saying... when you think of people that are like, oh, I love my all natural stuff in terms of food and
yeah, but I know plenty of people like that who are also very like, you can be vegan and enjoy natural products.
I'm not saying
and
they all fit into this category.
I know. I understand what you're saying, but I think there's quite the spectrum and different combinations of these things. And I think what you're describing, the first two things that popped to my mind when you said you find it interesting that people who, you know, sometimes would be into essential oils and this natural lifestyle, but now that, and the anti-vax community often fits into that, but now it's very much linked to the right and conservatives. But
the first half, the former, would you agree with that? That the essential oils and the holistic healing.
Sometimes, but I think a large portion of the anti-vax community, which is, again, a pretty small but very vocal percent of the population, I don't know that that's the reason. I don't think it's based in natural health and natural medicine and all of that. I think it's based in conspiracy and religion and not wanting the government to be able to tell them what to do with their bodies. I think that the people who are out there bringing court cases, protesting at their city hall, you know, filling out these religious exemption forms and everything, it's not because they are all natural essential oil vegans. I think it's because they want their autonomy. And yeah, they're afraid because they've bought it because they are more likely to believe into conspiracy theories and be caught by this disinformation. And so they're afraid and they don't want the government to tell them that they have to do something that they think could harm their child.
Don't get me wrong. There are benefits when it comes to some all natural things.
Of course.
Right. You know, for me, for example, I'm using a couple episodes ago, we were talking about how I'm growing out a beard. I'm using all natural ingredients in my beard oil. I didn't make it, but it's a company that has all natural stuff. It's made in the U.S. Not that that necessarily matters to me, but it's just better to support a company based in the country that I reside in. There's something intuitively, you know, attractive or compelling to the notion that I'm putting natural shit literally on my face.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting lab-made stuff, even though I do that with moisturizers and stuff. So,
right.
You know.
Well, that and so that's an interesting thing. I think that there are different, you know, levels of this kind
of comfort for what you want to put.
Well, that, and I was going to say, you know, you could talk about people who are like believe in a natural lifestyle and all of that. And I think there are people who genuinely do that, who are like very
to the grain of salt,
who are dedicated. And I admire those people, you know, they're
like
probably
down
very,
to the pink
they're
Himalayan
probably,
sea salt,
living very like sustainable lives. They're probably taking really great care of themselves. And but I just feel bad kind of like lumping those people into this.
I'm not.
I know, but I think you could, but in some instances. But I'm saying I think there's this special group of like the kind of Facebook moms that I came across that are like trying to sell you essential oils.
Oh, yeah.
And telling you that vaccines will cause your child's autism. You should go to this sound bath and use these essential oils. But they probably get McDonald's for their kids every
now
and then.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. No, there are some people who are like strongly anti-vax, or they get into, now we're getting into like the MLM thing. They're part of an MLM that sells essential oils or some other like fake wellness product, but they partake in other, like they're not paying attention to every single thing that they put on their skin or their kid's skin. They're not only growing or eating organically grown sustainable food. Like they're a normal like American eating processed food. They probably feed their kid goldfish and then they like have an essential oil diffuser in their living room.
Right.
Like I think the marketing aspect plays a role.
I get it. I just, for me, it's, you know, going back to the political point, it strikes me as odd that these people now are largely right leaning. And maybe it's not even a Republican leaning kind of thing. Or maybe it is because, you know, at its core, Republican politics push for individuality and freedoms from the government.
And less regulations from the government.
Exactly. Right. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
But my intuitive and my juvenile understanding of, you know, people's ideologies and personality traits, I would always lump that type of person in as a hippie, therefore liberal. You know? I would always say, oh, that person is hippie living, must, you know, love smoking pot and must be liberal. You know, that's just... I understand the flaws in that now, but my younger self would have definitely made that connection.
Yeah. Well, I just think it goes back to what I was saying before, that I just think in today's political climate, it's no secret that people on the right are more likely to buy into the conspiracy theories. They're more likely to
now
be,
they are.
Yeah, to be, you know, against government overreach and overregulation. And I think that's what ends up getting the very vocal anti-vaxxers you know, riled up.
Right.
I don't think it's because of a dedication to natural living.
So the final topic I want to hit on is what can people do, or what can maybe the government do to sort of stop the spread of misinformation? And this is not necessarily just geared towards the anti-vax people. This is, you know, when it comes to QAnon, when it comes to, you know, anything that is harmful. And I understand that the term harmful is very subjective, because by and large, if there's anything positive I'm going to say about the anti-vax movement, I 100% believe in my heart that everybody that is partaking in this anti-vax movement are doing it because they believe they are doing what is best for their child.
Yep.
They believe that. And I can't knock that. We are all trying to, all parents, all good parents are trying to do what is best for their child.
Mm-hmm.
So if the government comes and says what you're doing is actually harmful for your child, we're the government, we say so.
Right.
I get why there would be some sort of pushback, and I get why those that have already have, you know, conspiratorial tendencies, or have an eyebrow raised towards the government at that point, would push them over the deep end and say, no, you're trying to fucking take my kid away from me.
Yeah.
Or something outrageous. You know?
I completely agree. I think I'm glad that we have vaccine mandates, because I do think it makes us all safer. But I think, and I don't think it's very contentious for us where we live in general. I know there are some areas, some states where it's really bad, but and, you know, there has been local outbreaks of different diseases and stuff. But I think you just described it, that it's people aren't doing this because they're trying to harm other people.
No.
They're doing this because they're trying to, because they genuinely believe that this is the best thing for their child. And if, like you said, if they're already raising an eyebrow at the government mandating them to do it, despite the fact that they feel like this is detrimental to their child's health, is not going to help. Like telling them you have to do it because I said so is not going to get very far. So I think the biggest thing that is being promoted in terms of trying to combat this is just education and empathy, even though it can be really hard to do that, especially with other conspiracies too. If you have a family member who's you know, believes in QAnon or anything like that, the best way to approach it is with empathy, trying to find a way to connect with that person, like you just did, like saying, I know you're a good parent, you're trying to do what's best for your kid, and I was skeptical of this too, or I read that paper from 1998 too, and it seemed legit because it was from a doctor, and and then having a conversation from there, rather than saying, what are you, an idiot? You should totally vaccinate your kid. Like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
That doesn't help.
But that doesn't, that encourages vaccination more than course correcting misinformation. That is what I'm more focused on, because, you know, when it comes to misinformation, we do have freedom of speech here, and you can, online particularly, say almost anything you want. You can go on Facebook and post a status, I will not vaccinate my child, and nothing is going to happen to you.
Right, but where's the line of, you know, you can't say certain things. You don't have the freedom of speech if what you're saying can cause harm to other people.
But they don't believe it is.
No.
That's the difference. Like, you're talking about bomb on a plane. People that are doing that are straight up trolls. They want to see chaos.
Yeah, that's
no
true.
No one screams, unless you think there's a bomb on the plane.
Right.
You'll scream it. And at that point, you're saying, I thought I was doing something right.
Right.
I thought there was a bomb. But if you don't, if you know there's not a bomb and you say it, you're a troll and you just want to see chaos.
Yeah, the average person spreading vaccine disinformation thinks they're doing a favor to other people by informing them.
Yes.
To protect their kids.
So you, if intent is what we're measuring here, we can't say they're intentionally guilty of a crime, because
I didn't say guilty of a crime.
No,
I'm saying
if
censorship.
If the route of course correcting this is having the government sort of put a block on this
censorship.
You know, yes, yeah, and having an embargo on. This type of misinformation, those that are proponents of this are going to say you are killing people. You aren't saving lives. This information will save lives. The information that you're censoring is saving lives.
I know, but and I know that that's terrible.
Think.
I know that would be terrible to be on the receiving end of that. But at the end of the day, the evidence shows that that is the objectively correct thing to do. Like, well, I'm saying the side that's saying vaccination is safe and effective is the objectively correct conclusion.
But I'm not sure that censorship is the way to go.
So
I don't,
how would you?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't
so
know.
Then it's
more
and so then it's education.
Education?
So yeah. Then it's education on how to recognize a legitimate source and how to. So actually, I found the NIH website. Has a list of questions that you should ask yourself when you're researching anything like this.
How prevalent is this? How many people actually are aware of this?
I understand. I know that's where the education comes in, is people need to be educated on how to inform themselves. It's like we skipped a step. We skipped a step with social media and how to digest the information that's out there. Like, In college and in high school too, you know, you learn to recognize a valid source, but that was outside of the context of social media, at least for us, for our generation, that we learned all of that before social media. It's a completely different beast now. And I don't think people are asking themselves these basic questions when they're looking at a source of information.
I don't even think people are reading the material. I think they're reading headlines.
Or a meme.
Yes.
Like, or an image that has a caption that like evokes emotion.
It's captivating, yeah.
It's understandable why people have these reactions, because it's designed to do that. We talked about that with Plandemic. It's designed to invoke a reaction from you. And
it's persuasive. I get it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, this is a much bigger question than we can, you know, even come up with a tentative answer for. But yeah.
Like right now, the beef with Twitter, and to sort of tie a bow on this and to bring it into the you know, here and now, you know, Twitter is labeling voter misinformation as such. They're saying there's no evidence of this. They're removing posts and stuff. And by and large, you know, this is making things, I think, more divisive in, you know, political rhetoric and conversations. I don't necessarily think that's making things better in terms of cranking up the heat. I think not having misinformation is better than having it. I can agree with you there, but I don't know that's doing anything in terms of, and maybe this isn't Twitter's job to solve this problem and to unite people. It's not. It's their job to make sure their platform is full of truths and not mistruths. I can understand that. But when it comes to the government regulating this, I don't know that I feel comfortable with them having their hands in it and saying, no, you can't. It's up to us what type of information is allowed to be out there, you know, faulty or truthful or otherwise or whatever. To me, that's where it gets mucky.
Okay, so what are your feelings about the government telling these platforms that they are responsible for fact-checking and filtering information?
That's true.
So the government's not making the decision.
I think it's true that the platforms are responsible ultimately for not filtering it.
Mm-hmm.
but they're not responsible for fact-checking it. I wouldn't say... It's so large.
Oh, I know.
You know, Mark Zuckerberg should not be checking every single post and fact-checking it. But filtering out misinformation, having some sort of, I don't know, team of people, I don't know how it works, to sort of weed those groups out or block them, I can get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I feel comfortable with the government having ability to control Facebook and saying, nope, this stuff can't be passed on.
I guess that's fair, but I think, you know, there would be pushback from...
Because then it is a violation of free speech. If the government does it.
Unless what you're saying is dangerous.
Yes and no. It is, you can...
If you're putting a death threat out there...
I can post online and say, you know, Twitter person, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, or
and that person could file...
Let me rephrase. I can say that in, like... It context is key, right? So if you're in a Call of Duty fucking chat room or whatever, I'm gonna fucking kill you, and you mean it within the, but the government could sneak in there and be like, "What'd you just say?" And it, you know, take
that's
it completely
not, no,
out of context.
No. That would be the person on the receiving end would have to file a complaint and then have press charges against
you
for a threat.
But the government has the ability to filter the information.
They're not going to come arrest you for tweeting something about vaccination that's incorrect. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if they can stop, the only way for this to happen is to stop. You're never going to get through to, like I said, like the 2% of the population or whatever that's like super strong and vocal anti-vax and conspiracy leaning. No matter what happens, every sort of intervention or censorship is going to be part of the conspiracy. And they're not going to, you know, they're not going to be like, oh, they removed that. It must have been incorrect. But it will save how many thousands of casual scrollers or people like me who were looking for cloth diapering information from seeing this disinformation that's I didn't ask to see and is only harmful.
But then individual responsibility comes into play, because I think that's the difference between this and something like saying bomb on a plane. No one is not going to freak out if they hear bomb on the plane. Mm-hmm. I would be willing to bet there is not a single individual that was like, I'm calling this guy's bluff. Bullshit.
Right.
There's no bomb in this plane. And just sit and be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you see an anti-vax post, you have the ability as and ignore it, and it won't affect you.
I understand, but because we don't have enough education on how to interpret and digest,
the problem is a lack of information and education. The problem is not whether or not the government should have their hands on it.
Yeah.
I don't know that the government
should
have their
hands on it. You're right, because the majority of this information gets repeated and shared by innocent people who think they're doing something good.
Yes.
Who they're not trolls. They're not out to get people. They're not trying to cause harm. But it's just this wildfire that you can't stop once it starts. And so, maybe that's the answer, is having to educate the people on the receiving end of how to not fall for this.
And there will be pushback, because then they're going to say, oh, you're training me to think or have some sort of ideologies, you know, contrary. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for someone to...
I go back to like people who buy into people who share anti-vax stuff are the same people. If they're trying to sell you something on the website...
I get it.
It's not legit information. Like I
understand. I hear you. My point is I don't know that I want government regulation of social media and stuff. And that's where this is largely connected to. I don't know that that's the answer, because you as an individual have the ability to call bullshit. And even if you don't know how, that's a you problem.
Yeah, until it's someone else's problem, because your unvaccinated child kills their infant who can't be vaccinated.
It's Facebook's problem, largely Facebook or YouTube or whatever, to remove those groups, to remove and to have them filter.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But the government, it would be the one to tell the platforms that they have that responsibility.
No, because they're doing it now with QAnon. The government.
Oh, I know. They're doing it on their own. I understand. But I'm saying in the future, if new social media companies pop up, are they going to be left to their own devices to do whatever they want and not have any regulation about what can be said, even if it threatens public health?
It's already been done. There are platforms right now like Gab or whatever, and they're not getting the funding or having the platform. I think Gab is still going on, but, you know, eventually they'll fade away because it's just an echo chamber of the same shit.
And you such know, a minority.
What makes Twitter that's what I mean. And Facebook and YouTube, it's so vast and includes so many different people that it's able to survive if they eliminate a certain type, right? Whereas Gab is just these people.
Right. The small percentage.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe we're on our way. Maybe COVID was a wake-up call. And what happened on January 6th, too, I think was a wake-up call to how prevalent these issues are on social media.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully. And again, this is not me trying to push something. I'm hoping for a smooth day on Wednesday, the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and smooth with a bunch of guards everywhere. Otherwise, nice and smooth. So we'll see. I got nothing left when it comes to this. Tank's empty. You good?
The only thing I wanted to mention was that the... we didn't really talk about the COVID-19 vaccine itself, about some of the myths and disinformation. So, I mean, we don't have to. There's plenty of other things out there covering it. But if
you're
hesitant...
We'll do an episode about that when we get our vaccine.
Yeah, in like 8 months. But if you're hesitant about the COVID vaccine, you know, you mentioned too a while ago that you were kind of hesitant. But things have evolved. More information has come out. And we're learning more every day with the more people who get the vaccine. But... I think that's a good one to be able to empathize with people who are hesitant. And
look, I just want 5G all the time.
Oh, so you just get it injected?
Just get it. Yeah.
There you go.
I'll never need Wi-Fi.
That's what I mean. See, mocking people though, that's not the empathy that
I'll just have the internet all the time. Oh, sounds wonderful to me. That's like a bonus. Not only are you going to be good with COVID, you're going to have the internet all the time.
All right, so we'll post some. Maybe we'll post some links to some other good, you know, podcasts or resources that are covering some of the myths and, you know, myth busting things about the COVID vaccine, because it's continuously evolving.
All right. That being said, if you made it this far, we appreciate you listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any stories or input when it comes to the anti-vax movement, moreover, if you're part of it and you don't want to slit our throats when it comes to this, we encourage the conversation. We encourage to hear your stories. Please don't get super angry. We mean no disrespect. We know you love your children. Anyways, you can get in contact with us. You can talk to us about your experiences with it. We'd love to hear it. But again, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcatchers that are available to you, or even on the YouTube. Please subscribe to us there. And, you know, let us know if there's anything in particular you want to talk about. My fellow Bills fans, go Bills. Hopefully they can beat the Chiefs.
And happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I don't wish ill will on any player. And Patrick Mahomes, I'm sorry you had a concussion today. Today we're recording this on Sunday.
Yeah.
But hopefully you don't pass protocol. That's all I'm going to say. Just, you should rest. Yeah. You should rest.
It's for your own health.
For until September. Just take a nap until September. If you want to get in contact with us on our social media platforms, you can.
We're on Facebook at facebook.com/whileshesnapping, on Instagram at whileshesnapping, on Twitter at shesnappingpod, or you can email us at whileshesnapping@gmail.com.
All right. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll have something.
I have an idea.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Well, that being said.
It's cooking.
Okay. Take it easy.
Bye.